Social impact everywhere.
Welcome back, my fellow social impactors, to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast. And today we have another guest for you. We have David LePage, and he is the managing partner of Bisocial Canada. And he's using his work and his talents to focus on creating a social value marketplace. David, I first want to start off just by creating space for us to talk, but also really just say thanks for being on the show with me today.
Oh, thank you, Avery, for having me. Pleasure.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump right into the first question. And I always try to start this off as an introduction, you know, really, again, that fluid conversation. But if you could just expand on what I said and explain a little bit more about who you are, what you do, and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Well, I don't know that I'm a social impactor. And I think that's for other people to measure. It's, I can talk about how I think we need to move some issues, and we're dealing with some really long-term systemic and I think economically based problems around income inequality, poverty, and I actually trace the environmental issues back to an economy that looks at extraction as opposed to contributing to wealth. And when I talk about contributing to wealth, the difference being is over the last few hundred years, we've defined wealth as just an economic transaction. And in fact, I think Stiglitz in his recent book stated it really well. Money originally was a means of exchange. So if you had something of value and I wanted it, I gave you an IOU that the next time you needed something, you could call that IOU in. And we've changed from looking at that IOU or money being an exchange to actually being the goal. So what's happened, the marketplace where we trade goods and services, where we need to do that. You know, you have stuff of value and I might. And historically in the First Nations communities, there's history of trading to create community wealth, to make healthy communities. Somehow we've lost that and all the trading is based on who gets the most dollars. So instead of that being the objective, my premise is that if we can return to that basic model or move to a model where we're trying to build community wealth, not just individual wealth. We start to look at not just economic capital, but social capital, environmental capital, human capital, and social capital when we do goods and services. Then I think we can create a healthier communities.
Well, it's funny how quickly those kind of drivers or those kind of focuses actually then benefit everyone, right? And you talk about community health and wealth, and it's true that, there might be people, there's people now who have more than others, but they're not only are they economically higher or on the ladder, but they also have better access to health because we measure everything based on, economic wealth. They have better access to opportunity. And it's really divided even the basic human needs from people. And so I completely agree with you that if we move to a community-based model, it gives everyone a chance to do something, right? There is that equitable opportunity for people to survive and really meet those basic human needs.
Yeah, I think you're right, Avery. Even the access to health, access to education has become an economic transaction.
Yeah.
Not a human right. So if you want a good education and you have more of those dollars, you have more access where that's the evaluation. We look at, and I think that's changed. And if we put that dollar factor as the only, not only the means of exchange, but also the goal, we really skew the marketplace to just about financial transaction as opposed to being a means to create healthy communities.
I love it. We're talking on the same page. So, David, I want to jump into the next question. And this question is a little bit more about the community. So it's a great segue. And the question I have is, How are you then making a positive impact in your community with the work that you do?
I think what we're trying to do is to influence and change some behavior in the marketplace. So, you know, we're doing things like helping municipalities like Edmonton, Calgary, 17 communities in the Vancouver Island, City of Toronto, and others at the federal government level, and to look at their procurement. Because when you think about it, like the federal government spends $20 billion a year buying stuff. And in the next 10 years, they're going to spend $180 billion on infrastructure. If we can add a social value to that so that that government spending is really getting the best value for taxpayer, not just the cheapest product, I think we'll have some impact. Working with the private sector and getting companies to realize when they spend, they're always going to get things like whether it's office supplies or catering or couriers or cleaning services or whatever they buy. Adding a social value is actually going to change the outcome. When you think about, you know, getting your office cleaned and using a social enterprise that, let's say, you know, Cleaning Solution in Vancouver hires people with mental health issues, they do commercial cleaning. That increase in sales to the social enterprise means more job for people with barriers. And I think we can point to that across the country in everything from the trades, like Building Up in Toronto, Choices for Youth in St. John's, Build in Winnipeg. Across Canada, we've got an amazing array of social enterprises on the supply side. The more purchasing we can drive to them, the greater the value for the whole community. And I think that's where we can create opportunities for people that have been excluded traditionally.
Yeah. And it's funny how quickly you can actually augment those kind of existing you know, partnerships or resources where a social enterprise can fill that void. And not only, again, do they have that economic output, but they also are, you know, usually quite connected to the community. There usually is a social requirement or a social output, and then they look at the environment as well. And and it's not that hard. The conversation I always have with people is social procurement, this model, it's really not that hard to implement. Yes, there are you know, laws and regulations and sometimes unions that might kind of stop that progress. But as long as there's a conversation had across the table, it really isn't that hard to implement.
Well, and I think even some of those issues are, I think they're more perceived than real. I mean, when you think about, you know, why did the unions get started? The unions got started because they wanted a fair working place.
Yeah.
And if you're doing social procurement, you're creating a fair working place, whether it's union or not, but that should be one of the values built into social procurement, right? A fair and equitable working place and good wages and good jobs. So I think some of those traditional barriers, like the perceived barrier from the construction industry that this costs more. Well, the construction industry is short hundreds of thousands of skilled workers in the next 5 years. They have to engage in a different business model to encourage young people to enter the trades. Well, make that business look good. We know millennials want to work for good businesses. We see it working with Chandos Construction. They don't have trouble finding workers because they're a construction company that, you know, is employee-owned, treats people with all kinds of opportunities for growth and development and training. That's in the private sector. In social enterprise, Embers, which is a day labor social enterprise, I mean, they probably have over 300 people working just in the Vancouver area today, because they treat their workers fairly, they provide them training, they provide them insurance. So I think you're right. There are people who sort of say, well, why would we do this? And I think when you get behind it, nobody disagrees with the outcome. There's some perception that it costs more or it's harder. But I agree, Avery, it's more of a, I think, a cultural shift than anything.
Yeah, it's funny how it usually comes down to that there is that cultural shift that needs to happen. But what I do see in you know around the world and especially in Canada is that the shift is happening. So that does make me excited to see.
Well, I think it's international. I'm off to Australia in just over a week, and they're really leading a lot around social procurement. The state of Victoria. Our colleagues, Social Traders, which is an intermediary organization, really doing a lot to engage with like Australia Post, private sector, government, and building up very similar to Buy Social, working on how do you enhance and certify social enterprises to get into that marketplace. Scotland, very strong. You've got a federal government in Scotland that has said no economic development without social, you know, equality. The UK with their Social Value Act, where government purposefully tries to engage with social enterprise. So yes, I think we're seeing it. We're seeing it globally. It's a shift. It's an interesting. I just tweeted. I think yesterday, the day before, I ran across an article on social procurement that I wrote in 2006. And a Google search in 2006 for social procurement got like 170,000 responses. Wow. That same search on Sunday got 14 million. So something's happened.
Yeah, wow. Something's moving. That's incredible. So I want to jump into the next question, and this one might be kind of obvious to you, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Do you believe this idea of social impact is an important part of business?
Well, I don't think we can remove business from being part of community. It's really the premise of most of, you know, the work I've done over the years is that we're always going to trade goods and services, and it's just how we do things. Go back a few thousand years, and you know the First Nations communities on this continent, long before you know the Westerners colonized, were trading. There's evidence of you know growing and harvesting maize in the prairies in exchange for dried fish or fish from the West Coast, and evidence of, you know, the what we now call Quebec actually trading with First Nations communities in what we now call Mexico, and it was done because of different products and services that people had. Some people had gems, some people had wheat, some people had corn, some people had fish, some people had different types of feathers or quills. So the trading was done for value, and somehow in the 15th, 16th century in Western Europe, we started to redefine business not to be an exchange of goods and services, but to be a way of accumulating individual wealth, like we talked about earlier. And so I think the role of business has to be completely turned around. I think there's some efforts that are going in the right direction. I think the stuff that, you know, like, you know, Porter and Kramer are doing at Harvard in terms of shared values. I think some of the stuff where people are saying corporate social responsibility isn't separate from business behavior. I think there's some stuff like the B Corps are moving in the right direction, but the B Corps and others don't get down to an incorporated social value. They're still looking at things like governance and purpose. I think those are going in the right direction, but we have to look at, I think you're using the right term, Avery, is it's not just the intention or the word purpose, but it's really how are we measuring the impact? And if we're measuring the impact in terms of, you know, good jobs and community wealth, things like social capital and cultural capital. I mean, it's like people keep telling me, well, these big, you know, investors are only doing social investment. That's their intent. And I say, well, if that's their intent, let's see them change where they invest their money. We haven't seen, I think we've seen a lot of discussion of intent and purpose, which is the beginning of the process. I think we're going to have to see a lot of action in the next 5 or 10 years if we actually want to stop the crisis we're facing.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I always love this last question. And the last question I have for you is more about your advice. And so what would that advice be for other people listening today, or just people generally, to begin building their own impact in the world?
Well, from my perspective, that really comes, I think a lot of individuals are already looking at what they see as their, you know, their footprint, especially when they purchase things. But I think what we need to do is take that beyond just our individual lives and look at the institutions we work in, look at the marketplace from a different perspective. And that takes, I think, a willingness to say, you know, I work in a nonprofit, you know, where do we get our office supplies? Where do we get our catering done? Who cleans our office? And we make that an intentional thing at our office. You know, we have a social enterprise landlord, we have a social enterprise office cleaner, we get our office supplies from the locally owned socially responsible office supply company. And sometimes that's a little bit more work, possibly, because you have to think about it differently. You just don't go online and order from the easiest thing. You sometimes have to pick up the phone or something. So when you start to think about what we purchase individually and institutionally, if we can start to make that adjustment, I think that's the underlying behavior change we have to do. Because every purchase, whether intentionally or not, has an economic, environmental, and social outcome. And it happens every time we buy something. So if we intentionally create that ripple, then we can actually create that social impact. I think what happens is we don't think about the consequences down the supply chain or down the you know, we think about, you know, rezoning by a municipality. They say, okay, we're going to get a big building. Well, that big building is going to have long-term social, environmental, and economic impact. Do we do that rezoning with that consequence in mind, as opposed to just, you know, the immediate impact of that developer? And I think that's what we've lost, Avery, is thinking about the community consequences as opposed to the immediate economic return.
That's very well said, David. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of end the session today with really reiterating a lot of what you said, and it's that we definitely need to look at business as a new model, and it is shifting though. So there does need to be change, but the change is happening. And I think that's one thing that makes me so excited about the future, is that it will happen over time. But more than anything, I really just want to say, you know, thank you for taking time with me today to talk about this.
No, and let me know when you get the podcast up, and we'll help get some notice out about across our social media.